Good morning. It's 11:15, so I think we'll go ahead and get started, and a few more people may filter in, but let's give our speakers as much time as they deserve, which is our complete time. So let's get going. Welcome to this section, and glad you're here. Technical practicum analog audio transfer. Our first speaker is Doug Benson, and I'm just going to read Doug's bio that he gave me. Doug has worked professionally as a recording engineer since 1992, and in the past few years has leaned towards restoration and remastering, starting with the Complete Hit of the Week series for Archaeophone, and eventually starting a new label, Off the Record, with his lifelong friend David Sager, here in the fourth row, with his customary smile. Off the Record's first release, King Oliver, Off the Record, the complete 1923 jazz band recordings, was nominated for a Grammy in 2006. Doug also teaches college-level music courses and holds a degree in music composition and theory. Please help me in welcoming Doug.
Well, thank you. Try not to get too rambling here. What I want to talk about today is a process that I guess just through the internet has eventually become known as the pink noise method. Though if you check it out on the website that you see on the screen up there, they actually refer to it as the new way. I don't work for Tracer Tech. I don't sell diamond cut products or anything like that, so I'm not trying to hawk software by putting that up, but there is a very interesting and detailed explanation going into a lot more than I'm going to be able to do here this morning. So first, let me dispel a couple of myths about what the method is not, since there seem to be some misconceptions floating around out there. It's not intended to be some kind of a magic EQ setting that just automatically makes everything sound good. It's not something that can be randomly passed from computer to computer. And it's not a replacement for the human ear when you're making decisions about your audio restoration. So if you're of the school that I don't want a computer screen telling me what sounds good, I agree with you, and that's not what this method is all about. But that being said, here's what the pink noise method is and what it does do. It's a step-by-step, methodical way of creating a consistent archive of transfers, regardless of the equipment that was used to make them. It's easy to do. I find the result very pleasing and very desirable. And it's also a way of compensating for different combinations of phono preamps and cartridges that you might encounter, allowing you to reconstruct electrical recordings with truly correct turnover frequencies and acoustic recordings without any, because acoustic recordings are supposed to be flat. So as with any new method, we have to establish a need for it, I guess, in order for it to be worthwhile. So in this instance, I'll share a brief experience of trying to collect the complete recorded output of the King Oliver Band, the Creole Jazz Band recordings, a project that David and I released a few years ago. Because of the rarity of so many of these discs, especially in good condition, it wasn't possible for me to personally make every transfer myself on my own familiar equipment. So instead, I had to rely on other gracious individuals who offered their transfers and their time and shared material with me. And in fact, 7 out of the 37 songs that you would hear on the release came from other engineers who sent me their transfers. Now, their equipment was quite different than mine, and in most cases it was better, because I was working with engineers that had been doing it a lot longer than me with more experience and bigger budgets. But nevertheless, what I wanted to do was make all of these recordings sound as if you had a box of records next to you and you were putting on and playing them one after the other on the same system. Because inconsistency is one of the things that I had found distracting in the past about reusage such as this. So let me go to my first screen here. Okay, here's a sample. He's going to click my little icon there for me. All three of these examples, each one is about 6 or 7 seconds long, were flat according to the settings on the preamps that they were made on. If you'd give it a click. Thanks. Supposed to be changing color there, but we can't get it to work quite right. So David Sager was right. He said that he'd never seen a PowerPoint presentation that worked perfectly correctly. So I guess I owe you lunch now. I said, mine will. Yeah. I can use the laser pointer, I guess. Yeah, we'll see. I may not even need it. But you heard that they sound quite different from each other, even though they were all supposed to be flat, according to the settings on those preamps. The difference between the three is pretty striking. Now, here's the same snippets of the same three records. Each one now has been adjusted using the pink noise method. And they're not perfect, but they're much, much closer. Surface noise is different, but the quality of the music is much more consistent from copy to copy. And with this new consistency, we have a much better idea of what's actually on each of these records. It's much easier to select the best transfer or to make a composite using the best portions of multiple transfers, and I'll demonstrate that in just a minute. Now, we've heard the end result of the method when we're correcting source material like this with extreme variances. But what about the other extreme? Let's say that you are lucky enough to have this great archive of recordings at your disposal. You can make all your transfers yourself using the same cartridge, the same preamp for everything. Maybe you even have a preamp that you calibrated yourself, so it's absolutely perfect across the audio spectrum. Let me suggest that still your transfers are not going to be flat. It seems like a brazen thing to say, but don't forget that your cartridge also changes your EQ. You're always going to see a frequency response chart when you buy a new cartridge. And that is going to, in some way, undo the flatness of your preamp. So how are we going to make these things actually flat? It's by using this method. In a more realistic situation, somebody might have several cartridges that they use interchangeably. You have Great Osure, Ortofon, Stanton. Each one is going to amend that otherwise perfect signal in its own way. I own two supposedly identical Shure cartridges, and I've discovered that they have different responses. So no matter how good my preamp may be, I will still never get that truly flat result unless I use this method. There's also issues like equipment aging. As components degrade slowly and slightly over time, their sound changes a little bit. And after 20 years, you know, the transfers that you made back in 1989 may end up sounding nothing like the ones that you're making today in 2009. So the pink noise method, while it's not perfect, is still a great trick to have up your sleeve when you're digitizing vinyl or wax or shellac or durium, celluloid, anything that you normally would reproduce with a standard phono cartridge. Why pink noise? Because it's a known constant. Most of you here probably know pink noise is just a low-pass filtered version of white noise that drops 3 decibels per octave, so we always know what it's going to look like when we bring it up on that spectrum analyzer. The first question might be, you know, why not use white noise? Because white noise is just a straight line. That would be even easier to line up. The only answer to that is because I've never found an LP that contains a sample of white noise. It might be too intense of a signal to be reproduced by a phono cartridge. It would be a lot, asking a lot from your cartridge for something like that. So getting on to the method itself, here's the procedure. Let me skip ahead here, and there's nothing to play on this one. The first thing we need to do is make a sample of pink noise, recording it off the LP that I use comes from a British magazine. I think it's called Hi-Fi Magazine, and I neglected to bring a picture of it, but you find your recording that has pink noise. It'll be like an audio test LP or something along those lines. And you can see up there in the yellow and blue part, that's what we have there. That's the pink noise recorded flat through my particular preamp. Then what we want to do is put it in software, and here I'm using DC7 because it has a lot of neat tools like that, and it's the one that I can afford. And when you apply this, what supposedly is a perfect RIAA curve, and we want that to be there because the LP is meant to be played back that way, what you see is the line on your spectrum analyzer there over on the right-hand side. That line is supposed to be sloping much more than that. We want to see a 27 decibel drop between 20 hertz and roughly 10.2 kilohertz. That's not sloping enough, and it's also not very straight. So what we need to do for the second step is bring up an equalizer, and I've managed to make this work very well with the 10-band equalizer as well. It doesn't have to be a 20. It is much harder with a parametric. But once I'm playing the RIAA version of that pink noise file, and you can see the waveform is a little bit more tamed between the two, and I let the section loop back and forth as I'm pushing around the faders on that equalizer, you can see the line that I get on that spectrum analyzer is much, much closer to real pink noise. And once I've reached this point, you save that EQ setting, just save it as a preset, and from then on, whenever you're using that particular cartridge with that particular preamp, you bring up that particular EQ setting to make it flat when you're done. If I'm going to then switch to my Stanton cartridge, I would have another one of these. If I have a transfer that Michael Kiefer sent me from California because I have a pink noise sample that he made through his system, I bring up his preset. And it's a real time saver, and it allows me to make transfers and save them and really maintain consistency in my same archive. Let's see. Okay, this is what this pink noise is going to sound like. This won't be changing color, but every 10 seconds you will hear a change for the first three 10-second blurbs. For the last one, I think you'll be hard-pressed to tell where it changes from my analog-adjusted pink noise coming off the record to a perfect computer-adjusted version of pink noise. We'll let that play. So this is what comes straight off the preamp. And if you look at it, it's not really flat at all. Just applied RIAA. Now we have added the EQ preset that makes it truly flat. And somewhere in here, in about 5 more seconds, it's going to switch over to perfect pink noise. And you'll hear that it's pretty close to perfect. So it's a nice way of getting a really, really accurate setting out of your system. It does have to be done on a computer. Now here's a little pertinent audio demonstration. Be sure to always make this adjustment the very first thing you do when you're working with sound files. You don't want to do any pitch correction before you've made it flat, because the non-flat version has EQ changes in there that aren't supposed to be there, and if you change the pitch of that and then make it flat, you're not really correcting it, you're making it worse. Okay, this has two separate files here. Let's see. Two different copies of the same record. One was transferred by me on my own equipment. The other was transferred by someone else and sent to me on a recordable CD. In each case, you'll hear the audio flat according to what the preamp says, followed by the true flat version, number one.
Thank you.
obvious immediate difference that we hear is that the high-end noise is tamed a little bit because that particular preamp has too much on there. But if you listen closer and work with the method more, I think you'll hear that it's almost like the whole audio spectrum of the music is just sort of pulled into phase. It's like there's balance to the universe when you're listening to a truly flat acoustical recording compared to one that's maybe flat straight off the amp. Can we hear that second example? Now, using the pink noise versions of each, I've brought both of these transfers to the same correct pitch. And in this case, it happens to land right at 78.26, which is kind of rare for OKs during that time period. But I've made a composite between the two of them. And to keep things interesting, I've skipped ahead to the vocal chorus because I like Eva Taylor. But notice how, other than the obvious difference in the condition of the records, the music fits together seamlessly.
Marching down the aisle with you, you'll make them all stare with a little black eyed Susan stuck in your hair. But you're the candy, Mandy, won't you decide? Everything is Mandy, Mandy, once you're my bride. In a year or two there may be three of a kind. Listen to me, Mandy, make up your mind.
Fade out with Sidney Bechet's famous sarousaphone solo. Now, obviously, the second disc there was a far superior copy, but if those two records had been in similar condition, I can suggest to you that the switch would have been nearly imperceptible. And not that we aren't capable of making an adjustment after the fact if we put a composite together, but why not do it with something that we know is truly flat? So in the case of these acoustic records, where all we have to do is make them flat, pink noise is a great tool to have up your sleeve. This also carries over, though, into transfers of electric discs. They provide the additional challenge of needing to apply that turnover curve to make them correct. It's not unusual to see collectors who routinely play records, both their acoustic ones and their electric ones, through a preamp using a standard phono RIAA curve. And this is fine for casual listening, though it tends to decrease the high end a little bit much for my tastes. There's also special preamps you can get, like the KAB ones they're making now, or about 20 years ago was the OWL systems, that have common 78 turnover frequencies in addition to the standard LP curve. And while these are also wonderful for real-time listening, they're still subject to the same potential inaccuracies that we encounter with typical preamps. Because first, we don't know just for sure just how flat the flat setting really is. And second, we're changing cartridges. We don't know how that cartridge is going to change the sound. So we also have to be sure that we are getting that disc to the correct speed before we apply any turnover frequency, or else we'll be turning it over in the wrong place. 78.26 was not by any means the standard speed back in the 20s. In the 30s, the early Decca recordings, starting in 1934, run at 80 RPM. I've encountered early electric Victors that vary between 77.4 and 80. I have electric OKs, a lot of them are recorded at nearly 82. That's why all those great Louis Armstrong Hot 5, Hot 7 recordings sound so dragging when you play them on a standard 78 turntable. And unfortunately, they've been reissued that way more than once. The European standard 77.9 because of the 50-cycle system. So with all these different options, it's good to have a musician standing by to double-check the pitch if there's any question. So how does the pink noise method figure into this? The way I handle electric recordings is the same as acoustics. Start with a flat transfer. Use the aforementioned procedure to make it truly flat. Then you keep that transfer as your archive. Don't turn it over and keep it that way. You keep your flat version. Then you correct the speed, and lastly, add your turnover curve. Why do you save the flat version when the turned over one is actually more correct? Only because you'll occasionally encounter a record with a questionable speed, such as Louis Armstrong's Put 'Em Down Blues, which could arguably be pitched in either G or A flat, neither of which corresponds to the speed of the other recording that was made during that session. And John R.T. Davis wrestled for years with the correct pitch of Cornet Chop Suey before he finally got his hands on a copy that wasn't a dub and was able to, actually the way he described it to me is he ended up with egg on his face because he had said E flat all along and it actually ended up being F. So those odd exceptions are out there, and once you've applied your turnover frequency and saved it that way, you're pretty much committed. So I prefer to save my flat transfers with in my archive and turn them over each time I'm going to be doing some work on them. There may also be times where we have a question as to what the correct turnover frequency is. For example, the recordings made by Orlando Marsh back in the 20s where all bets are off. So I prefer to save all my archive that way, just to give myself the option of changing the changing my mind. But here's a little bit of demonstration of electric discs, and you can see this is a four-part process. Flat coming straight off my preamp, truly flat using the procedure that we saw earlier. Then I'm going to correct the speed, and I have a whole other talk I could give on speeds, but trust me that this record is supposed to be running at 80 and that's what I actually have it at here. And then lastly, applying a 200 hertz turnover. And some people think it should be 250, which is another good reason to save flat transfers. So let's hear these. Started playing with this method, I was hearing things in the recordings I'd never heard before. It was just as if the universe had suddenly collided with the true universe, and we were, you know, leaking in the sound from before. I guess we'll go ahead and do this one as well. I have this and one other example, and then I'll be done. But this is a European recording, and there are some exquisite recordings made during the 1920s, and many of us have never really heard just how good they are because we've been listening to them incorrectly. Let's go.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I'm very... I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical.
Number four.
I am the very model of a modern major general. I've information, vegetable, animal, and mineral. I know the kings of England, and I quote the fights historical from Marathon to Waterloo in order categorical. I'm very well acquainted, too, with matters mathematical. I understand equations both as simple and quadratical. About binomial theorem, I'm teeming with a lot of news. Lots of news. Ah. With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse.
With many cheerful facts about the square of the hypotenuse. With many cheerful facts about the square.
And my last example, one of the most exquisite sounding recordings I think I've ever heard from this time period.
If you've never seen a quaint old southern city, just think of New Orleans. If you've never seen a quaint old southern city, just think of New Orleans. If you've never seen a quaint old southern city, just think of New Orleans.
Get a load of this.
If you've never seen a quaint old southern city, just think of New Orleans. If you've never seen that town, boy, it's a pity. There's nothing like New Orleans. It will remind you of an old-fashioned ace. A glass of wine will greet your smiling face. And if you ever see a black-eyed girl like mine, boy, you ride in New Orleans.
And keep in mind that this great-sounding recording here, this is not the finished restoration. This is your starting point. You've just gotten everything to the point where it should be for you to begin doing, you know, click, crackle, noise reduction, whatever it is that you want to do to it, hopefully not adding reverb. No, I said the R word, yeah. But there you have it, pretty much. I hope the discussion hasn't been splintered or confusing in any way. But for me, the pink noise method has been a really great problem solver, and I love the consistency that it gives me for my library transfers. Yeah.
Can you go back to that very first slide, DC7
string? Sure.
Yeah, that one. I noticed that you're using the RIAA portal version of paragraph 2, and I think you see that there's a
roll-off
in the basic
box
at the very bottom end.
Yeah, like it.
That RIAA version
They have one called Improved Response. Yeah. Yeah. I've experimented actually with that other one. I did most of my curves or most of my EQ settings on the earlier version of Descartes before they had that corrected one on there. So actually, that's a good point that you bring up. It's very, very low. I mean, when we're working with acoustic records in particular, you're going to begin reducing rumble and things like that as you start to restore it. So that's not so much of an issue. But especially with well-recorded electrics and LPs, that's certainly something that might be worth visiting. Yeah.
I would like to make the point without any disrespect for the loudspeakers. Mm-hmm. Many of us are so far off axis that we can hardly hear.
Mm-hmm. And plus, these are PA speakers. You know, when I'm working at home, I've got reference monitors in my studio. So we can't provide a perfect listening environment, you know, in a case like this. But I can explain the method, and you can get the gist of it, you know, if you're interested in pursuing it beyond that. Yeah.
I just want to add that your discussion about changing the formal type of response is important. But in my experience, you also have to remember that you can use different types of different styles.
That's true, and that's the one, if you would call it a flaw in the method, I guess, is that a different stylus will have a different sound as well. Unfortunately, the only pink noise samples that I've been able to find are on LPs, so I have to use an LP stylus to get them. Do you know how they were turned over or how we would? Yeah, I've always wondered if something like that was out there, a wider groove paint noise sample. Yeah. Really? I've seen records turning up on eBay and auction lists that have, like, you know, test tones and things, but I haven't seen noise. Here, here. Yeah. Yeah. Any other questions? Yeah, right up. I didn't arrive at that conclusion. I got that from a list that that's what these companies were using. Actually, there's one that's built right into the Diamond Cut software, and I found a couple on the web as well. And I think the OWL preamps came with something too, and those have been published on the web in the past few years as well. Yeah. Yeah, and even listening through your own system, you know, you have to try different ones. Well, okay, it might be 200, it might be 250. Which one sounds better? But then if I take it and play it in my car, is it still going to sound better, or is it then going to be tubby because I've got a different speaker system out there? So, I mean, there's still a lot of kind of hit and miss, but the basic method itself, especially when you're working with your own equipment, is a really useful way to put together an archive of transfers that you can trust when you come back to them the next time you need them. Yeah. Back. Roll off, I mean, in the bay? No, they came off of my preamp, which claimed it was flat. And according to the spectrum analyzer, it's not really flat. So I was just using that same method. Obviously, it drops off, you know, pretty severely around 11, 12K on the, if I can probably bring that up. You can see that. Right there. There's not really any useful information up there anyway on 78s. I generally won't put on a specific roll-off. You're talking about in the restoration phase of it. I'm going to do it by ear. I'm going to bring up, I use a lot of Waves plugins. They have one that's called the C1, which is a really excellent analog style low-pass filter, basically. And I'm going to adjust that part by ear so that I don't feel like I'm missing any of the high frequency that might be on that record. So I don't have a standard roll-off that I like to use because every record is different. Yeah.
Why rotational speed is 78.0234?
There was a little note that was supposed to pop up as part of my PowerPoint that didn't. That's just where my particular turntable happens to be. It's a newer Stanton, and I think they were just thinking 78, not 78.26. And I had a way of deriving that exact speed by recording a record with a click and doing it about 10 times to make sure it was the same and measuring the distance between those clicks, and that's what it worked out to. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And in addition to that, you can't necessarily tune it to your piano or whatever instrument you're using, because they may not have been using a 440 at that point in time. Yeah. Right. And people tend to use those. They'll go to, you know, the little portable keyboard and say, oh, that's not an A, so you retune it, and it may not be an accurate result when you're done. But some tuning forks are at 238, so you have to know what the piano tuner had at their session. Well, that's true.
Thank you so much. Let's give Doug a round of applause.
Thank you.
I would add that Doug needs to get on out of here, but I'm sure he would entertain email as follow-up.
Sure.
This is a topic that deserves much attention and is always subject to discussion. So let's keep it going, and if you want to follow up with Doug, please do.